This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 135, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, Discount Comic Book Service, and Netflix.com. Hey, you, get up. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 135. My name is Ron, and I'm here with...
Connor.
And Josh.
And...
Hello!
Hello!
And we're and thank from you for calling Comic Phone!
And we're from iFanboy.com, where we like comics, usually when there's not a million to read, like this week.
We like them.
But this week we read them, and every week one of us picks out the best one and writes a pick of the week review that goes up on iFanboy.com on Wednesday night. And then we come here and talk about it on the podcast, as well as the other books that came out during the week. So we're going to talk about Josh's pick. But before we do, I just want to warn you, we're going to talk about what happens in the comics. So we might spoil some things. So if you haven't read your comics yet, press pause and then come back after you've read them. It will be a better experience for you.
Yes.
Kitty Pryde's dead.
No, she's not.
No, she's not. She's just bored. Out of her freaking mind. So I guess this leaves me with a pick.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I was dreading this week because looking at the pull list I had and just all the stuff that was coming out, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to make this call and people are going to be unhappy and
The odds are stacked against you.
It was a difficult week. However, first off, I want to say I bought a lot of comic books. I read a lot of comic books, and I really liked most of them. But
yeah, it was a really strong week.
Yeah, it was. However, it was like a B-plus week, though. Because I would read something else. Oh, that was really good. I enjoyed that. But it wasn't like, ooh, like it didn't blow me away where I could be like, I could write something about it and be really enthusiastic about it, you know, and come here. And so I had actually left Astonishing X-Men number 1 or Astonishing X-Men number 25, depending on how you want to call it, which it isn't, but should have been, I guess. And I left it for last. I don't even know why. And then reading that book, I was like, ooh, this is good. It's pretty good. And then just right at the end, and I wrote this in my review, but there's the page where everything's already happened, and Wolverine's depressed, and he's in socks, and he's got beer cans all around him, and Armor's like, "Can I help?" And he just goes, "Are you a beer?" And I was like, "That's it. Everything was great, and that was the icing, and there's no, and I was like, well, you know, unless something horrible happens in the last few pages, then that this will be the pick, and it absolutely was. I had no qualms about this pick. I have no, justifications.
Qualifications. Yeah.
None. This was just a great ending. I said in my written review, and I'm saying in the mini, this whole story, this what? Run, is just legendary. I mean, this is going to be up there with the great X-Men stories of all time, I think. I mean, Ron, you probably...
Yeah, no, I think overall, yeah. I mean, just purely from the art alone, I think from Cassidy's art and everything.
Really?
I mean, Yeah, well, the thing was, if you remember, if you go back and you look at all the story arcs that happened in this whole 25-issue run, the second one, the Danger Room one, was a little weak, mm-hmm. you know, but then it came back pretty stronger with the one after that, and then this one has been super strong. I mean, there were four total arcs, and you know, like the first one was the best, if you ask me. Just I think it's probably his newest and freshest.
No, that was really good. It's funny because I didn't start reading this until issue 13, 14, and since I'd went back and read the first two trades. And I really enjoyed it, and I don't typically like X-Men stuff. To me, that was, you know, the other thing that I found interesting is, and I saw this a lot where people would say, we shouldn't have picked this because it was late or whatever. And normally that is a criteria. I don't care.
I think there are certain books that are exempt from that, and this is one, and All-Star Superman, which
exactly.
I'll talk about later is the one.
That was the other one that came out this week. And I
just kind of have to. I mean, normally I have a hard line against late books, but for some reason, these two books I have exempt from. Mine.
Well, because when you get it, it delivers.
It does.
That's the whole trick. I mean, even me. I mean, like you know, the diehard X-Men fan and stuff like that, and the fact that you know, like I want to preface that I love this issue. I thought it was really great. I don't like some of the things that happened.
Sure,
but I understand. But like little things like Whedon did to fix things that were wrong with the X-Men that even I agree with. Like he finally gave Beast. He brought back the romantic angle to the Beast,
mm-hmm.
which
right.
at the very very end, which I'm like, why didn't you do that earlier? That's what I, you know what I mean. Like it was mm-hmm. great. And ultimately. At least with this issue, the art is just what I mean. Like when you open that first 2-page spread and saw Spider-Man, like I gasped.
Yeah, I did too.
Who do we have to kidnap to get Whedon and Cassidy to do Astonishing Spider-Man,
or the Fantastic Four,
or
Doctor Strange? It doesn't matter. Like everyone he wrote in this book was great, and while ultimately I it wasn't entirely clear why all the heroes had that to me, although eventually I guess it was.
I had the same thing. I figured it would. I thought there was something about the magic, about the bullet having magic protection. Yeah, but that wasn't fully explained.
If it was months and months and months ago.
I think we can really fully judge this whole arc, to go back to your point about it being an all time arc, is when we can read it all together in the inevitable omnibus that comes out. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be an all time arc. I think I agree with Josh. It's probably my favorite X-Men I've read in years, but. Mm-hmm. I really want to read it. Sit down and read it all the way through to see how it all runs together.
In addition to when the heroes kind of vegged out and all thought they were saving the Earth from the bullet and weren't, and not being sure about that. The only other thing that annoyed me was just the acceptance of Kitty's fate. And so for those who don't read it, basically what happens: Kitty Pryde's trapped in the bullet, and the bullet's heading towards Earth, and ultimately, and they can't stop it. They try throwing things in front of it, and nothing works. And ultimately, she uses her power and phases the bullet to go through the Earth and saves the Earth.
Do you mean the acceptance by her or the acceptance by others?
The acceptance by others.
Okay.
And so, because it ends with her saving the Earth, and then we kind of get a flash forward, and it's Scott in the office at the school, and Peter going, "So we're not going to go after her?" And they're like, "There's nothing we can do." You know, like, and it just seemed a little, I don't know, it just seemed a little...
Well, if it has magic protection, it may not be easy to find. I mean, it's not just like it's a big ship hurtling through space. It's a ship that's been enchanted.
But also, you have to say that.
It may be exempt from that, yeah.
You have to say, I mean, the point of the story was she sacrificed herself.
No, I understand that, but and of course they left it open that of course she'll be back because she didn't die and she knows what happened. But it just the way that was handled in the two panels between Colossus and Cyclops to me were just like similar to the way that we didn't know exactly what was happening when the heroes vegged out. It was just like it's a little too neat and simple.
But the Wolverine grieving was so perfect, was great. Yeah,
but
the thing is they had to end the story. If they had been like, well, we're gonna mount a super effort, that's another story.
Right, no, which I totally understand, but I would have liked a little more reason as to why they can't do it. It's just like, well, they tried, they can't. That's not to say they're not gonna keep trying, but
it's... Well, you
got to
go with it a little bit, because he said, you know, Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, you tend to believe those people. You don't know how long it's been. You know, they made a try. One of the things that I think that Joss Whedon does really well, if you've ever read his stuff or watched the shows he did, is that he doesn't give you what you want. Like
right.
he will break your heart, and that's what he did here.
Yeah.
And he knows that the way to make a compelling story is to not give you what you want, and right, it hurts like hell. And he makes you love the people, so when you don't get it, like it's even worse.
Right. Which I, and don't get me wrong, I totally understand. I totally So
I just I had no question about this being the best thing that I read this week, which is really saying something in this week. There was really funny stuff. There was like extremely emotional stuff. And one of the other things about it being late all the time that I think is interesting is that it's a fairly complicated plot. And every single time I felt like I had to figure out what was going on again, and usually that annoys me. But usually by about, at least, you know, the latest halfway through an issue, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, all right, I got this. I know what's happening, and I get the point. And
it's funny because I have a bad problem with remembering stuff. I mean, we have that problem here. We read so many books, so it's hard to keep up, and we get a lot of emails reminding us of things we've forgotten. But I, for some reason, had no problem remembering the last issue of this. I don't know why, but the bullet thing stuck in my head.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really cool twist at the end. So usually, 99% of the time with this book, I have got to remember. But for this time, I was ready to go from page one, which really helped. Also, Spider-Man Saving the World was the best panel of the year.
I liked the bit where Storm was on the radio and she's like, he's punching people to wake them up. At least I think that's why he's hitting them. It's just like, you just see Peter Parker going around just punching everybody.
He's so funny.
And I struggled with the aliens, with the break world aliens, and that whole, you know, kind of the prophecy and who was doing what, whatever. But I thought the final scene with Colossus talking to the guy, and he's just like lecturing him, going, you know, like, I will not destroy yours, and then turning the page and just seeing Wolverine jump and cutting the dude's arm off, and then Cyclops going, I will rule it. It was just like, yeah, it was one of those, you know, like, kick-ass moments. It was really cool.
And so, there was a lot of those. If you just remember how many great moments there were in this story, you know, going, like, or even the run, if you go back to Wolverine who thinks he's a little girl, I mean, just...
Yeah.
What a great run. I mean, that's just got to be up there. And there was a lot of content. It's, you know, 25 big-ass issues.
Yeah.
That's nothing to sneeze at. And it was a good ending. I had a lot of fun with it, so.
Yeah, it was great. It was an epic issue. I mean, it was really good. And while it doesn't fit exactly into current continuity, whatever, we understand where it can fit and all that, you know, like, and Cyclops gets his visor back at the end, and although that doesn't explain how or why, but, you know, but it was, I mean, as an X-Men fan, I can't ask for more.
I have to assume that Emma was holding it back.
And
they can't keep that up forever.
Yeah, I guess.
She was getting nosebleeds.
He says it was a beautiful gift when he's looking at her, so clearly she was doing it. It's just, you know, you got to work on a little bit. Whedon doesn't hand it to you in a silver platter. You have to reason why things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And let's just, I mean, it goes without saying, but John Cassaday is a modern master. I mean, the dude.
Oh, absolutely.
He's. I've been saying he's sort of like the closest thing we have to a Neil Adams at this point. Like he's the guy who's taking it to the next step, and then leaving us.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodbye. Goodbye, John Cassaday.
Hey, there's money somewhere else. I'll be over there.
But
Wolverine and his Beast, his Spider-Man. I mean, those are just he does a great Beast. I mean, I hate the way Beast. I hate the
girdle
Beast.
Yeah, the feral Beast. Yeah.
But his beast is I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Now one thing I forget, I gotta dig up my Secret Invasion issue, but am I right or wrong, is now Agent Brand, she's dead now after Dum Dum Duggan blew up that satellite, right?
If that was her.
Yeah, oh true, yeah. But that would be a shame.
Who is she supposed to be the daughter of?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
There was a
really ballsy line about her when she said her name, and she's like, I don't plan to be gang raped, and I was like, oh Jesus. Like, every once in a while, he'd sort of hit you with something that just had a little more weight to it, and then she branded him. It's good stuff. I hope she's not dead.
So her father was a blue furry monster. So, I mean, if there's some reference to a previous alien, I'm missing it, or I don't know. So I'm sure someone will find out. So
yeah.
Who was the Muppet that was blue and furry?
Gonzo?
Who's the Muppet?
Gonzo and Cookie Monster.
Gonzo's her father.
I don't think Gonzo's in 616 continuity.
So she's part weirdo?
She's part weirdo. Super Gonzo. Is the Super Gonzo part of 616? Oh, I said it. Fuck that.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on. All
right, we have so many books to talk about. This is the cavalcade of books show. We've said that before. This time, like, all books.
No voicemails, no emails, just books.
It was ridiculous. I mean, on top of the books that I bought, and then the Starman Omnibus came out. I mean, it was just like there was all these books just came. Oh my, it was just ridiculous. It was unbelievable.
Starman Omnibus, the great mirage on the horizon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's real.
Finally came out. Speaking of finally, Final Crisis. Oh, that was awful transition. Final Crisis number one from Grant Morrison, J.G. Jones, the first issue of the big DC event, and I have to say, I had so many books, like we keep saying, I didn't, and I had so much to do this week, I didn't actually get to this book until Friday, I didn't get to most of my books till Friday, and all I'd seen is a lot of mixed reactions, so I was really apprehensive going into this. I really liked it. I really liked it. It would have been one of my choices for pick. It would have been up there with a few other comics, but I really thought it was a pretty much a prototypical Grant Morrison first issue in that he lays a lot of groundwork for stuff, and he doesn't give you a lot of answers, which a lot of people don't like. But with Grant Morrison, it almost always pays off by the time you get to the last issue. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of you got to take the whole journey to get there to see what everything meant in the beginning. Like Flex Mentallo, which I just read, was exactly like that, where the first issue made no sense, but then when you get to the last issue, the first issue made total sense. It's just a matter of you have to read the whole piece as a whole. And as someone who's read Death and New Gods and Countdown and Seven Soldiers of Victory, which apparently now is very important, I got most of what was going on. I didn't love everything that happened. I didn't like the monitor stuff. I think that stuff that those guys dragged the story down, but I liked most of it. Mm-hmm. And it looked great.
Yeah, no, J.G. Jones's pencils are just—they're awesome. They're so good. So, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I heard a lot of negative criticism of it, and I didn't really feel as if it deserved the total negative criticism. I didn't think it was awful. I didn't think it was a miss. Admittedly, it wasn't. It's a first issue of a huge event book, so I didn't expect a lot from it. You know, I expect the energy to come, you know, in the mid issues. You know, there lot. You know, I agree with you. The monitor stuff kind of dragged it down. I thought it just seems that there's a lot going on, so it lacks some of the good. Some of the good real characterization moments, character building moments that Morrison right. can do, you know, like the scene with the Justice League was really only three, you know, a couple of panels, you know,
mm-hmm. right.
And you know, I feel as if that could have been way more, but it's going to be, you know, seven issues and I'm patient. And so the big thing though, is that Martian Manhunter getting killed. And the criticism I've heard a lot is that a character of that statue and stature, it only happening, you know, him getting captured off panel and then getting killed in one panel. Seemed a little disrespectful, people said. But I don't necessarily agree with that. But
I don't agree with that at all.
It's funny that if you think about it in contrast to the last Marvel event, the Civil War, and they're like, someone will die, and it was Goliath, a character nobody's thought about ever.
Yeah.
You know, and that was such a big deal. Like, there's actually a user review that we were going to spotlight later that sort of makes a comment on this, but the fact that he was sort of unceremoniously dispatched of and it was no big thing, that's the point.
Yeah.
A death is not supposed to be respectful. They're murderers.
Yeah,
I think
Martian Manhunter has always been one of my favorite characters for a while. He's probably the top 10 superhero characters of mm-hmm. mine, and I've always liked him. For me, the death showed how scary Libra is
yep.
and how much of a threat he is. Now we have to respect his prowess. And the thing about heroes is they don't always die heroically. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make him less of a hero. I mean,
also,
Davy Crockett didn't die fighting off Mexicans till his last breath. He was executed. That doesn't mean he was less of a hero, you know?
And
execution doesn't mean you go down. It doesn't mean you've been diminished in any way.
And John Jones is you know, he can hold his own.
Right.
He's no small thing. I mean, he's got the fire thing going on, but, you know, he was up there with Superman and Wonder Woman, so...
Right. Yeah, no, he's a big power, yeah, totally.
I had read a lot of the same thing too, so I was a little reticent, I guess, going into this. And also, I don't know, I really liked this, but I was trying not to think of it like a big event book and not make it bigger than it was. I went into it reading it sort of like I went into reading Seven Soldiers, where I was just like, all right, I'm not going to know everything that's going on, but I'm going to try to be interested in all of these little things going on, all these characters. And you're right, like, Grant Morrison will come around. And this ties into – I haven't read everything in DC, but it ties into some stuff that I have read and some stuff that actually goes pretty far back. I was looking at that, like, John Stewart is flying around and some of what he was – his dealings with the New Gods and Apocalypse, that was from Cosmic Odyssey, you know, like,
yeah.
way back. And so it seems like it's tying into that a little bit and just, you know, like, this – I think this will be a fun way to discover a lot about these characters as long as it holds up and –
Yeah, and one example, like I was talking about the characterization thing. I mean, like the scenes with Dr. Light and Mirror Master, as brief as they were great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I you know, like Morrison really wrote them entertainingly, and you know, continuing the you know the Rogues being you know one of the best things about the DC universe. And to that, you know, I assume what they find is Metron's chair. So is Libra Metron?
I don't know. I mean, that sets up a lot of interesting ideas. The whole – actually, this ties into a couple of books that not many people read, Teen Titans and Birds of Prey, the last month, has been dealing with the Dark Side Club, which is from Seven Soldiers of Victory, is when it was the human – Josh, did you get to that point where the human form of the Apocalypse – gods were like Darkseid was a human and
no, but I liked that in this. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean that's Darkseid now, right? I mean that. Dude.
Yeah, so apparently they've fallen. You know, their death led to them falling to human form. You know, people are like, oh, but Darkseid's dead. Well, he was dead as a god. Now he's a man.
He's still got glowing red eyes. So,
well, because apparently in the death of the new god things, it was left to say maybe he tricked. And everybody in one, but no one knew it. So this is probably what's going to be revealed here. Mm-hmm. And so that, in that sense, the idea is that the bad guys won, and this is now we're going to see the repercussions of Darkseid having finally won the war against the new gods.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked all that stuff.
I think
they've been showing up in other issues. So
mm-hmm. I think if you went into this expecting to be blown away by a big Superman Batman fight, you know, and wanted it to pay off right away. It's not going to be like that. It's going to feel more like 52, actually, where at first, I mean, because it was stretched out for months, we were like, what the hell is going on? And then at issue 16, 17, 18, it started to coalesce, and you're like, oh, this is good. Like, this is what that feels like to me. So that's why I think I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
I mean, this is epically spanning. We go from the first man, Anthro, to the last man, the last Commandi, the last boy on Earth. So, I mean... Yeah. He clearly has an epic feel going for this. It's just going to take a while to unfold. It's just
like, it's going
to
take seven issues,
and you might not get everything in it. You know, you sort of have to almost pick and choose the things that work for you because there's so much here. You know, I guess, or you could read Wikipedia incessantly
forever. But it was a big Grant Morrison week.
Batman 677 Part 2 of RIP, which is only for this issue on a 2-week schedule. It goes back to monthly after this,
because
mm-hmm. It was catching. It was waiting for the side books to catch up, finish their plots, and now they're lined up. I thought this issue was much better than the last one. Did you guys buy this?
I was completely lost.
Really?
Like, I finished it and I was like, I don't know what's. It moved faster than a G.I. Joe cartoon.
I thought this introduced some pretty interesting concepts in that. The Black Glove is this organization that's trying to destroy Batman. It may or may not be being led by this guy, Dr. Hurt. It may or may not be inside Batman's head. It may or may not be Jezebel Jett. It may or may not be Alfred. I mean, basically, what we're left with is we don't know who's responsible for taking down Batman, and it could be a bunch of different things. And I thought that was really good, mm-hmm. really interesting. At the very end, there's some sort of psychic trigger takes him out, and then a bunch of guys show up and beat the hell out of Alfred. So. I thought it was really good. I mean, in a similar way to Final Crisis, we haven't seen it unfold enough yet to really get a handle on what's happening. But I think
I think that's it. I think I want to understand this book sooner. Like I can with Final Crisis, I know it's going to be spanning, and there's all sorts of stuff happening that I'm not going to get, and I accept that. I guess in a Batman book, I kind of want it to be more clear for me, which I think is why I'm having a hard time grab onto it. I feel constantly like I've missed something, I guess. And it moves really fast. I mean,
right.
Where and then some of the stuff is real and some isn't, or what's in it. It's just like I'm at the point where I'm like, is this girl, is she like real? Is she even, you know, is she there? Is he? And he just seems so out of character, like being in love, that for me, that came out of nowhere. Because in my head, Batman is the guy in Detective Comics, I guess.
Right. She's been around the entire run for him.
I know, and I haven't been reading it, so that's my deal.
So it's been like 2 years of her.
Maybe I'm also in denial because I don't want it to. I don't want this to all change. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm curious. I mean, the thing is, if they kill him, if they have somebody up to Batman, it's just part of the long story. I mean, when I was in college and they did the whole Azrael Batman thing, and I freaked out, foaming at the mouth because I didn't understand then how these things worked. That
sure.
It was just part one of a story. The payoff was part two when Batman comes back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're setting you up for this. I mean, maybe that's what we'll do here, maybe not. I don't know, but I'm willing to go along for the ride until we find out what's happening.
I'm interested. I'm not going to stop reading it. I just, I don't quite get it, I guess, yet, but that's fine.
Yeah. New Avengers 41. We're still on the island.
it's like Lost.
It is like Lost.
Well, I thought this issue was really interesting because it goes back, way back in the New Avengers run to the first or second story arc when they were in Savage Land and saw the S.H.I.E.L.D. people doing something funky.
And I had nearly forgotten about that.
And I remember at the time we had all been like, because they're like, what's going on here? And then they get attacked and they left and they're like, we'll have to go back to that. And then Civil War started. And I remember we were just like, what's going on down there? So we finally get kind of it clued in that way, but through the eyes of Kazar and Sheena.
Shana,
I'm sorry. And you know, I thought it was good, but again, I mean, it was good and bad in that it was good that it explained that and kind of, you know, continued the patchwork of the bigger story that Bendis is telling, but bad in that it was just like, all right, well, let's get a move on here. You know,
it's funny, like it's the camera just keeps switching to somebody else's point of view for a while. I'm like, okay, I got it. Kazar thinks it's weird.
Yeah,
I understand that's what's happening. I would too if I were Kazar. Oh, and there's Captain America. I'm just like, oh.
So next issue, we're still going to be on the island because next issue is whatever's going to happen.
Oh, Savage Land.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Here's the thing.
It's going to be an island, right?
I don't even want to complain about this because despite myself, I actually enjoyed reading this.
Yeah, no, anytime
Bendis can write Spider-Man, I'm all for that.
I don't think Kazar, I don't have a lot of experience with Kazar. I was like, I don't think Kazar talks like that. But I didn't really care because I still had fun reading it.
Kazar's a man. I mean, he was raised in our society. I mean, he's, you know, Kevin Plunder. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not like a savage.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. I was
this was on character for Kazar. I mean, okay. It was totally So
and I just I liked how it tied back into the Avengers stuff from earlier. Like I did a lot of and that was years ago. So that's kind of cool. I had fun reading this, and I know that it didn't move the whole thing, but it's probably my favorite of the Secret Invasion issues so far. I guess.
Yeah.
Just in that it's telling us something. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But they gotta get off that island soon.
You just gotta move. I mean, we saw what's going on in Captain Britain. How did that happen? You know, like, why don't we get there? You know, so. I don't know. But it was good. I mean, yeah, I know we've been beaten on the Avengers books, apparently weekly New Avengers, Mighty Avengers schedule, and that's just because we're excited and we want the story to move forward. But I thought this one was fun to read, and I know typically, Josh, you previously haven't liked Billy Tan's art at all. Did you have a problem with it this time or no?
Is this the guy who did he do the X-Men?
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
He was
much better here. Yeah,
it was much better. It was much less. I don't know, animated, not animated, but edgy. You know what I'm talking about?
He was the guy that did the big sword X-Men issues.
Yeah, that wasn't good, but this was much better.
He's got a good Spider-Man. Great drawings of Spider-Man this week.
Yeah.
There's a great – the Captain America at the end is a good Captain America. I love it when they really
His problem was with perspective in the X-Men stuff. Everybody's faces look flat if they weren't looking flat on, but here he didn't have that problem. So maybe it was an inking problem last time. I don't know, but maybe the inker this time was better for him.
He inked it himself.
Oh, yeah. Then maybe it was just the inker was bad on X-Men.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just getting better. But either way, no, I enjoyed the art on this. I think it worked. It was clean. It was good.
Yeah.
It wasn't amazing, but So I was in the shop and I looked over and I saw a new book from Dave Sim and I thought, I'm not. Whoa, what's that? Like I just sort of like went back and I picked it up and it's called Judenhaus. It was a $4 square bound sort of prestige format book.
56 pages, perfect bound, yeah.
And it's basically an exploration of anti-Semitism by Dave Sim, which is strange because he's not known for being the most accepting of persons. However, I was actually so fascinated by it, and it was the $4, and I just thought, well, I have to read this. I have to check it out. And it was really, really, really good.
I wish this had been your pick of the week. I wish, because then we would have had a meltdown on the website. It would have been awesome.
Yeah, I know. I thought about it briefly, but, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't
have... There would have been effigies burning of you.
I didn't have fun reading it.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
It was rough.
It was rough. Really – basically what it is it's Dave working in that photorealistic style again where he's taking all sorts of image from Nazi concentration camps and close-up sort of ghastly images of what happened to people there. And then,
so it was a nice light read.
It was not a nice light read, but it was actually really touching. And the way that you do that kind of art, where you're taking a photo that's realistic, but you're drawing it, like it lends it this other quality where it's so creepy to think that he had to sit there looking at the photo and then drawing it over and over again with tiny little cross-hatched, details, and really look at it for a long time. And it makes you think about it. It makes you look at it a little longer. And then the whole way through, he has quotes from historical figures of horrid anti-Semitism. I mean, just from everybody who you've ever admired.
Mark Twain, Voltaire, like it's just
yeah, George Washington, the Pope. The very worst ones are at the end, where it's by Martin Luther, who's the monk who is responsible for Protestantism splitting from Catholicism. Nailing the thing to the church wall and all that, or the door, and it's horrid. I mean, just like the awful, awful amount of anti-Semitism that was in stuff. And, frankly, I didn't want to talk about this as the pick of the week. I mean, just everybody who was, Neville Chamberlain, who was the prime minister in the UK, and just
even our leaders, even Truman and all of our,
everybody was.
And Roosevelt, yeah.
None of those people sound any worse than Hitler when it comes to talking about it. And I'm going to get in trouble again. This is if you're into history, or you're into God forbid you're a buff of World War II Holocaust books. This is actually something that's definitely worth taking a look at. It is a different side of Dave Sim. It's done entirely respectfully, so if you thought he was going to do something horrible, he didn't.
He's definitely got the position that he basically believes that the term anti-Semitism, and it says on the back that the term anti-Semitism is completely inadequate to the abhorrent cultural phenomenon which it attempts to describe. Mm-hmm. He's definitely on the side of the right, I guess. Mm-hmm. That is not a good thing
historically, for centuries and centuries and centuries, how Judaism has been frowned upon. I mean, and just horribly, outright, people just calling them monsters and horrible, like Borat, but they're real people. I mean, just awful, awful shit. And it's a really, really touching book. I mean, like, you'd be hard-pressed not to feel an emotional resonance from this. It's really graphic. It's not going to be for little kids or anything like that, obviously. But pick it up if you're in a shop and take a look at it. He also, he ties it back to comics in the very beginning by just saying, look at all the people who created comics. And it's Joe Simon, yeah, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, Joe Shuster, Will Eisner, Max Gaines, Bob Kane, Jerry Siegel. These are all guys who very well could have been wiped out by the Holocaust. And, this is why it's important to you.
And it's interesting in comparison to his other project, Glamorpus. I mean, Glamorpus was which we talked about. It was a kind of photorealism style exploration of early 60s fashion models. And at this heart of this is a photorealistic exercise focusing on Holocaust victims.
Yes,
which is it sounds so callous to describe it that way, but it's literally he's doing the same thing, just changing the subject and changing the historical resonance.
Well, it's also it's not about his process. Yeah. He's not.
No, exactly. No, it's about the history. This is a history book. I mean, this is definitely a history book. And it's as noted by in the back, where there are several pages of annotations and bibliography and source material and references and stuff like that. This is meticulously researched and it was just
Yeah, I don't even know if this is a comic book, but it was it's definitely worth picking up. $4.
Yeah.
Definitely worth picking up. And let's move on because it's depressing. Please.
So, Greg Rucka's back on Daredevil.
Switching gears very fast.
So, are you guys happy to have your Gotham Central team back together?
Daredevil 107, Greg Rucka should stay here forever because I didn't feel morose reading this book.
No, I did. I did. I was like, oh, Matt's still – I'm like, okay, you have a couple of issues, but you need to break Matt out of this thing. And I don't care if it's not realistic for him to forget about Mila, but I'm cool if he does.
I think they're laying the groundwork to do that.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah. So,
it's just he added something. There was a spark of energy to this book that has been lacking for like a year.
Yeah, well, it started to move.
It's action, a new story. There was stuff happening. Yeah, I mean, it's just like moving on.
The reason that this wasn't a pick, I wasn't really blown away by it. It was really solid. There wasn't an oh wow moment. There wasn't any, but it was just But it was good. It felt like we've moved out of – we've taken a turn. We're going to go in a slightly different direction and move forward, which was really nice. Yeah, these guys worked well together. What more can you say about Michael Lark's art?
No, I was – I mean, I just – this is my favorite issue of forever just because, mm-hmm. you know, anything to get him snapped out of this funk that – not just Daredevil's been in, but the book and
– right.
Brubaker writing the book, just it's been in this Mila induced funk for years, and it's just
and by extension the character of Dakota, really in a good place because nobody else has been able to do what she did. Where's Foggy been all this time? You know,
to be like, he's an enabler.
He's keeping the practice running, man.
Someone's he is. Well, yeah. You know, Luke Cage showing up in this was fun. I thought the first scene was really cool because it shows you how bad Matt is, that he attacks Luke Cage. Like, he's an absolute utter prick. I mean, just he's completely far gone. This is going to be about bringing him back, I hope. I want that to be the point of this, and then we can sort of move forward from there.
Yep. Ultimate Spider-Man number 122 came out this week, and it was funny because, you know, I didn't really think that we would talk about it on the show, but then somebody added it to our list of books we're going to talk about, and I reread it, and the more I think about it, I kind of came on a kind of a bit of a realization about this book, is that, and bear with me, but similar to the, you know, personally, I enjoyed, you know, books like Strangers in Paradise, and I watched shows like 90210, and I watched, you know, dramas, and we all kind of watch some stuff like that, and the thing that resonates with us is the characters, and you want it, you start caring about the characters, and you want to see what happens, and what Bendis has done with Ultimate Spider-Man, which I just realized with this issue, is that, like, the whole Peter Parker, Mary Jane, now Kitty Pryde, all that kind of family that has grown, like, every little thing that happens, I'm on the edge of my seat, because I care about these characters.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I just think that's just amazing. I mean, this just seems like a one shot issue of you know, Spider-Man versus the Shocker, mm-hmm. but it works in so much character interactions amongst the kind of mini family that's been formed.
That's actually a testament to how well those characters have been developed. Is that you know, a lot of times a book only works when somebody's interacting with the main character, but in this one, Mary Jane and Kitty Pryde can have. You know, they can interact outside of Peter, and then that has meaning, and that has resonance, and that's really cool. And I don't know, it was kind of an interesting – this was a really cool look at the idea of what about that jackass villain? Why is he such a jackass?
Yeah.
You know, and that was – it was good.
Bendis, you know, is known for his long, drawn-out eight-part stories, but this was like a one-shot story that you mm-hmm. could pick up and read, and it was great. The reason I put this on the list is because I closed it and I realized Ultimate Spider-Man is pretty much the perfect comic book.
Oh yeah,
it is comic book personified. It is fun. It is exciting. It's drawn well. It's written well. The characters are great. There's no better comic book out there this is perfect.
122 issues of this.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Can you even? That's amazing.
It's cool.
No, it's just, I mean, it's not, I'm not saying it's the best comic book out there or the best written or the best drawn, but it is perfect.
Yep.
It is a perfect comic book. That's why I put it on it. I had that realization of reading 122. It's just
It sounds like I had a similar realization and, like, why is it perfect? And it's great. So. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't read Ultimate Spider-Man, where could you find it?
Assuming you're in New York, you go to Jim Haney's Universe because it's one of America's best, most progressive comic book stores. Jim Haney's Universe offers the best selection of comic titles related merchandise from mainstream to manga to minis. Jim Hanlon's Universe has it all. Jim Hanlon's Universe is located opposite the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan and at 325 Newdorp Lane in Staten Island. And I was actually in the subway and I saw Newdorp Lane has a stop on the bus in Staten Island. Maybe you can go there. I don't know. Maybe it's far away.
You weren't in Staten Island.
No, I just looked at the map and I saw Newdorp. And I went, Newdorp Lane. And I did the whole ad in my head again. and you can visit Jim Hanlon's Universe on the web at jhuniverse.com. Visit them at MySpace at myspace.com/JimHanlon's Universe. Jim Hanlon's Universe, where art and literature meet.
So we had mentioned it was a ridiculous week as far as books, and there's a whole more stack of things to talk about, so we're going to motor through a bunch.
I'm so pissed that I'm not reading this in issue.
All-Star Superman 11, I think this is the penultimate issue. I'm pretty sure it ends with 12.
I think so.
No one writes a better Lex Luthor than Grant Morrison. This is all about Lex Luthor. You know, from earlier in the run, he's been in prison the whole time, and this issue opens up with his execution, which doesn't quite go as planned. They foolishly let him fix a final cocktail, which turned out to be a 24-hour superpower cocktail, and he busts out of prison. This is like the biggest, wackiest, greatest science fiction Superman story ever told. And he burns all the guards with his heat vision, and he stops bullets with his hands, and he goes out, and he wreaks havoc. And while this is happening, Superman is literally dying from his sun poisoning. So he's not at his strongest, and now he's going to deal with superpowered Lex Luthor. No one writes a scarier, smarter, genius, evil genius Lex Luthor than Grant Morrison. This is he blows every other Lex Luthor out of the water. Just fantastic, and just so sad that the last issue is coming up. This has been one of the greatest books in the last couple of years.
Cool.
Yeah.
I really want the next trade a lot.
I really want them to put it in absolute form a lot.
I was pissed off that I couldn't let I was like, I don't want to buy this issue because I haven't been buying the issues, but I really wanted that to actually be a contender this week. So
it's very good.
Yeah. Sorry.
No regret. It's all right. Proof number 8 from Image Comics. I'm loving this world that they're creating in Proof.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Proof in a while, but Proof is still going strong. I actually felt like there was a bit of a lull in the 5-6 issue area.
Yeah.
But the last two, this current storyline, they just ended with the big game hunters, and I thought it was really good. I thought this issue particularly was really strong.
Yep.
I like
the addition of the deputy, the Elvis guy. Yep. I just like the way, like, I feel as if now the characters are kind of coalescing and I buy into the world that they're building and you're right, this one was really strong, and now I'm excited for the next arc. So
yeah, if you all like non-traditional sort of Bigfoot adventure, this is
X-Files-y kind of, yeah. You know, yeah, so
when's there a trade coming off of this damn thing?
Probably. Well, at issue 8, and the stories are only not as long as normal stories, so I don't know.
Hmm.
There was an ad for it, the book. There was an ad for it.
Oh.
I'll tell you after the show. Oh, no, here it is. Collects the first 5 issues. Doesn't say when.
Soon.
It's just book 1, that's all it says.
It'll probably be out at San Diego.
It's only going to be $10, too. So.
Yeah.
$10 to pick up the first 5 issues.
I will do that.
Yes.
Action Comics 865. Jeff Johns is on a retcon tear. That's awesome.
Everything must be fixed.
If we could get him on Daredevil and Retcon Mila out, that'd be fantastic. he takes a Toy Man, who has gone through very, very many incarnations over the years, and we find out that those were all toy androids that the original Toy Man had made. So we see all the different versions of the Toy Man show up as androids. And actually, what's funny is there's more Batman in this issue than Superman, because Toy Man's been put in Arkham. So it's just I wanted to mention that. Johns is just on a tear. He's taking all the things that have been wrong and fixing them. Slowly but surely.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's like Karnak of the Inhumans. He can spot the flaw.
Who was that? Who was the villain that could spot the flaw? It was a Major Disaster. somebody on the website had said that all Superman stories are read the same except for also Superman. They need to read Jeff Johns' Action Comics because it's really very, very good. Next issue, Gary Frank comes back and starts a Brainiac story, and then next month on Superman, James Robinson starts, and they're going to start writing in tandem, so that's going to be really fantastic. So people need to be reading Action Comics.
Cool.
Damn.
Oh, I'm still going. Huntress number 2, Huntress Year 1 number 2, I wanted to mention because it's sort of a standard Year One story, and it takes a lot of some familiar tropes. Huntress is a Italian American character whose family was the mafia, very original. But in the Year One,
the mafia's got families too.
I know, but it's just every Italian character's family is in the mafia.
We shouldn't talk about this
unless you all are in the mafia, Ron.
What?
And basically, the first issue, she gets sent to Italy because her family's been massacred by a rival family, and so this is basically she's grown up and she's ready, she's pissed off, and it's just been really strong. Some new writer I've never heard of called Ivory Madison, and so it's good to see more women writing, especially women characters.
She works down the street from my comic shop here in San Francisco. Because when Huntress Year One number one came out, all the people that worked with her were coming in to buy it, and they're like, "We work with her." And so yeah, apparently this is her first comic book and everything. She works for a website that's like a social network for writers. I think it's called RedRoom.com or something like that, which sounds kind of dirty, but. I think this is her first comic, and she's coming not from traditional kind of comic writing, but more from just writing. You know,
well, if it's her first comic, then it's very good because most people's first comics are usually pretty bumpy, but this is pretty solid, and it's just very interesting. If you like the character of the Huntress, this is a good thing to read. I like her, so I bought it. It was good.
Cool. So, 1985 from Marvel Comics.
Mark Miller is starting a whole new genre.
Well, hang on. So a lot of these creators that are out now, like Mark Miller and Grant Morrison and Bendis and stuff like that, they get these ideas and they make the mistake of talking about them years before they can actually do them. And so 1985 is one of those ideas that Mark Miller has been talking about literally for years, and it was originally supposed to be a Fumetti comic. And if you don't know what Fumetti is, that's the use of photography as the art as opposed to actually drawing it. And somewhere along the line, they decided to scrap that, and they got Tommy Lee Edwards to draw it. And I remember when Miller was at Wizard World Chicago last year, they made a big deal about the fact that 1985 was happening, it was going to come out. Here we are almost a year later, and we finally get the first issue. And what the concept is that if you read Secret Wars, you would get this, but many of you didn't, and I don't blame you. But what happened with Secret Wars was that...
Hey, that was awesome, Secret Wars.
Secret Wars was awesome. And Secret Wars was the first major kind of Marvel kind of cross-comics crossover that took all the heroes and a bunch of villains and put them in this other dimension or this other world where they had to fight each other because the Beyonder said they had to. And it led to Doom fighting the Beyonder and Doom getting the power of the Beyonder and this whole big battle and all this kind of stuff. And then it ended. And when it ended, everybody went back to Earth. But what Miller's saying is that when the villains went back to Earth, they didn't make it back to Marvel 616 Earth first. They stopped in our reality, in our Earth.
Earth Prime,
yeah, in DC. And so this is the story of telling that where what we see is we get kind of a quick little recap of Secret Wars, and then we see, you know, a world that in 1985 that's very much like our own, and there's a comic book shop, and there's a snarky, you know, guy who works there with a Cerebus t-shirt, and there are, if you look on the walls, there are, you know, cover, you'll recognize all the covers from the 80s.
Which was great.
Totally great. Totally made me believe that this is the 85 in the world, and this kid stumbles upon an old huge mansion near his neighborhood, and this creepy kind of guy with sunglasses is moving in, and it's kind of weird, and he looks up, and in the window is the Red Skull. And so essentially what's happened is that the villains have landed on our Earth, and they're just basically setting up camp in this huge old mansion.
It's a reality show coming next season.
It's like Miller's only going to do books about kids who read too many comics from now on. That's going to be his thing.
But that said, I don't care because this was awesome.
I agree.
I just loved it. I mean, and of course, because I'm a kid who read comics and all this kind of stuff. But it's like the universe that he's, you know, opened up to is I can't wait to see where this goes. Like, this is just it's a high concept, and it's a little hokey and a little weird. And it ends with, you know, them seeing Dr. Doom and, you know, but
no, it ends with a Hulk.
And it ends with Dr. Doom, and then they stumble upon there's the Hulk. Yeah, so
right.
It's supposed to be the little, you know, the end of Secret Wars, and right before they come back from Secret Wars, you know, whether or not it's totally canon or not, I don't really care. It just seems like a lot of fun, and I actually like Tommy Lee Edwards' art a lot. It reminded me of Gatiss's art.
Yeah,
I see that, which is good for realistic world stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this was a blast. This was so much fun to read.
I like the characterization of the kid and the dad. I thought that was really nice.
Oh yeah, it was really, really good. And even the characterization of Mole Man, you know what I mean? And like and Mole Man talking to Doom and stuff like that, like it made it somewhat believable. You know, like this almost reminds me of like a Marvels.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know. So yeah,
it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So
I picked it up on a whim, and I was really glad I did.
Yeah, no, this is gonna be a fun series, I think. This is definitely gonna be a blast. So
or at least the first issue, and then we'll see if it could
yeah.
Like kick ass goes off the rails. Go ahead.
Now have either of you ever read Fire Breather?
I have.
You have? For those of you who don't know, there was a miniseries that came out, it was 2005, I think, from Image, written by Phil Hester, art by Andy Kuhn. It was a really fun little miniseries. I think there was four issues, maybe
it's a
six.
Great concept.
Yeah. And the concept is there's this kid, and his mom is a normal human, but his dad is a 300-foot-tall dragon, who's like he's like the Fin Fang Foom overlord of all. He's a full-on dragon, puny yeah. humans, all that stuff. You know, speaks like an Arthurian knight. And it was a really fun miniseries, and not much happened with it. It kind of went away. I think Firebreather made an appearance in the Invincible books at some point or in some
Yeah, Firebreather pops up here and there throughout. There was like the Pact, I think it was. It was like
yeah.
where Zephyr from Noble Causes and Invincible and Firebreather, they formed like a mini team for a little bit. And mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And basically, Firebreather is the kid, and his name's funny. I'm trying to remember what it was.
Duncan Rosenblatt.
Duncan Rosenblatt. he's Duncan Rosenblatt. and he's like, he looks pretty much like a normal kid, except he has orange skin. He's got little nubs of horns. He's got these tiny little wings. And there's custody issues. Like, he has to spend the weekend with his dad in a cave where his dad beats the shit out of him, you know, training him to be a dragon. And then his mom is like a normal human who's bugging him about bills and stuff like that. This has a lot similar to Invincible. It has a lot of the things that I really like about Invincible are part of this book. And this is the first issue, number one of the ongoing series, came out this week.
I'm glad you wanted to mention it, because I was afraid with this huge week that this would get buried in all the other books that came out.
Yeah.
And this is a fun book to read.
This was up there. I would have almost picked this. I think if Astonishing X-Men, this might have had a shot, because I like this kind of book, and it's the same thing we were talking about. It's the thing that the Ultimate Spider-Man has. It's the thing that Invincible has. It's not necessarily a superhero. It's just sort of he's a kid who's half dragon, and it's just it's a fun concept, but it's done sort of realistically, and it's a good book. It's a really good book. So please make sure to check this one out.
Cool.
More now
from you.
Oh, look at this. Now, who really thought that I wasn't going to pick Fables is the pick? Like, there must have, like, for a second I was like, oh, I hope I don't have to pick Fables, because I just don't want to deal with the fallout.
Yeah, that would have been.
I know. Bad. But it was awesome, because the war has started, and they are, there's, you know how in, especially the second and third Lord of the Rings movies, the books as well, but the movies more people have seen, there was a real strategy to the attacks. Like, you could see, right, like, they sent the orcs in, and then there was ladders, and then the thing. And I always love that part where, like, the strategy for the attack is real. And that's what this book is about. It's how the Fables are attacking the adversary's forces, using real strategy and the way that they're doing it. It's really tactical, and it's really specific, and it's a ton of fun. This book has been great. It's this as good as it's ever been, and it looks like there's a little – this is a three-part story on the war, so good stuff. And I have one final prediction to make. If when Dan Dare number 7 comes out, Dan Dare number 6 came out this week, either Connor or myself have the pick.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's going to be the pick of the week.
6 was so good.
Six was so good.
Was really, really good.
Oh, man. This series has been good every single thank you, Connor, for picking it the first time so that I read it. Yeah. Because I have enjoyed everyone.
Yeah.
And this is Ennis at his finest, and I don't think anyone's reading it for some reason. And that's
no, they're not. And I think people complain that Ennis is too graphic in his books and want to be able to read them but can't. Should read Dan Dare, because there's like no blood in it. And
yeah.
There's no
it's science fiction. I mean, it's science fiction. Yeah. I mean, and it's science fiction steeped in war stories, which is great. So.
And there's just a beautiful, beautiful, like, the Dan Dare character. Like, how much do you want him to be your uncle? He's the greatest guy ever, and the way that he treats the girl, the sub-lieutenant, and the way that it's about, like, the way that the military apparatus works as opposed to the fighting men, it's clearly somebody who's read a lot of World War II material. I mean, a lot.
Yes.
And it reads sort of like, you know, it's like a Stephen Ambrose book, but in space with Venusians. It's a great book. Loved it, and I really can't wait for the conclusion, although I don't want it to be over. There.
I see in the back page they're doing an oversized hardcover, but only the first three issues. So that's a mistake.
Oh, that's not smart.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why don't you just wait until the whole thing's out? And if they put out an oversized hardcover of the whole series, I'm buying that book.
These Virgin
the first
people.
First three issues?
Virgin's weird. They're trying to new things. I don't know. But so you got to make sure you don't miss Dan Dare, as well as all the other great comic books. And the best way to do that is to purchase your books at Discount Comic Book Service. DCBS, as they're affectionately known. They're an online website where you can go do your weekly, monthly kind of comic book shopping. They've got specials up to 75% off. They typically discount 40% off the major publishers. They've got a flat rate shipping of $5.95 for all orders. So anything you order, you know, no matter how much you order, it's just a flat rate. You can buy anything that comes out in previews every week. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock. And when you make an order, you can track that order online, see where it's going. So head over to www.dcbservice.com. That's dcbservice.com. And start buying your comics at the Discount Comic Book Service. So as we've mentioned on previous podcasts, over at ifanboy.com/comics is where you can pull your comics every week and rate them and leave reviews. And we've got a couple of reviews from the users at iFanboy that we wanted to kind of spotlight. Our first one comes from Moody. Is that how I pronounce it? Moody?
Moody
writing about Final Crisis number one, and he or she gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and says that there's no pandering to fanboyism or any artificial hooks. The Martian Manhunter's death is brilliantly executed. How was he captured in the first place? I have no idea. I could care less. But as far as we're able to tell, he's mercilessly and unceremoniously executed. No drawn-out fight or huge splash pages lend the incident any effective excess, which is so overplayed in superhero fiction that it wouldn't have been really effective if they tried to anyway. So, interesting thoughts.
I liked that. I thought that was a really good take on it because, you know, that it's in contrast to a lot of the criticisms. A book that we don't talk about very much is Thor, and Patio wrote in on Thor number 9, giving the story 4 out of 5 and the art 4 out of 5. I'm really enjoying this series after getting very close to dropping it. Coypel's art is fantastic. JMS's scripting is right on. I can't believe I said that. If there's any problem, it's that Thor's character has yet to really define or redefine himself. It looks like he's going to be taking on his father's mantle by ruling Asgard, but the trade-off is that he seems a less relatable character now, and I hope we see some stories where Thor can develop more than just a paternalistic ruler side of his personality.
That's a fair comment.
Yeah, it's actually really nice, but he likes it. He said there was a little lull. I've read the first 6 of them and a couple after, and I'm going to prepare something on that at some point. I don't know what it is.
So make sure you head over to ifanboy.com/comics and check out the other reviews the folks have written and write your own reviews. It would be nice to see what you think.
And in the middle of that, if you want to watch any movies or TV shows on DVD, you can go to Netflix, over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways. They have the Blu-ray titles for the high def. They have fast delivery, so usually a day either way. Most of the shipments will go out that same day they get them. The plan's starting at $4.99. Of course, you can get a free 2-week trial if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. So do that.
Excellent. And real quickly, we were remiss last week in mentioning that we had done a special edition podcast about the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull movie. So if you missed that, head over to ifanboy.com or look in the feed wherever you download on iTunes, whatever, you can download that directly. And we talked about Indiana Jones without Connor, which is...
And you guys were stupid.
Okay.
If you really liked it, don't listen to it.
Meh. So if you can head over to ifanboy.com, and that's where you can read Josh's Pick of the Week review as well as a ton of great discussion. It was a great week for for articles on iFanboy and discussion, and everybody was talking and arguing and bickering and all that, the good stuff that makes a good internet website.
And everybody should look this week. There's going to be lots of new things happening this week.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting this week. So head over to ifanboy.com and make sure you register and check it all out.
And then while you're there and you want to burn some cash, get over to the ifanboy.com/store. You will find links to the books from our video shows and some of our recommendations and a portal to Amazon where you can buy stuff through them that will help out the show and the site. So please do that. Thank you.
I just wanted to make a quick note because I got this email twice this week. If you don't want to buy something specifically from the store but want to go to Amazon and help us, you just click on the little Powered by Amazon link and that takes you to Amazon.com.
Yep.
Because people have been confused about how to get there if they're not buying the stuff we've listed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Click on that graphic and it goes to Amazon and then we get credit. So that's how you do it.
Yeah, or click on any of the banners from Amazon that are on the site and then just shop on Amazon as you normally would, and then that helps us as well. So thank you. As Josh mentioned, we got a video show that comes out every Saturday at noon. You can check that out at revision3.com/ifanboy. This past Saturday, we talked a little bit about Sin City and we gushed a little, I'll be honest with you. but next week is the big show. If you head over to ifanboy.com, you saw a couple weeks ago we said that we had the opportunity to talk to a legend of comics, and we asked for your questions. And this Saturday, we present to you Stan Lee. So
and
we're very excited about that one,
up.
So check it out.
He just kept
talking. Did that really happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Did. Yeah.
Every weekday, ifanboy.com or revision3.com, you can find the ifanboy mini, which is a short form, 1 to 4 minute. We say 1 to 3, but really it's not 1 to 4 minute. Video show from one of us talking about anything and everything with comics, and they're always fun.
It's also never been 1 minute. iFanboy.
Hey, that's a challenge. That sounds like a challenge.
I'll make a short one. Shit. We would give you the shirt off our back, but instead they sell them over at jinx.com/ifanboy. Send a picture of yourself wearing it over to Jinx. They'll send you free stickers. Send it to us because we always think that's fun.
Yes.
That's the only reason.
And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, 326-2697 with any questions or comments or anything like that. Typically, we read them here on the podcast. We'll get back to them next week. And also, every week, we do our letters column. So if you write in an email, you might make the letters column, which is fun. So
they might even make a video show.
Yeah, if you want to be our friends in the social networking, you can go to ifanboy.com/about, and there you can find links to all of our social networks, MySpace, ComicSpace, Ferb, Facebook, Twitter, everything like that, and be our friend.
Many, many people responded by writing reviews in iTunes, and we so much appreciate it. Thank you, overwhelming.
Blew through 200.
Listen, though, we're not done. There are still thousands of you who haven't. And do you have any excuse? You have a computer, obviously. You know what? We're not going to talk to you. Until you do. So go to iTunes, leave a review, or we're on the outs, buddy. Or just if you can, if you can just tell people you think might enjoy the show, let them know about it. That would help us very much. Do that.
Yes. And what would also help us, if you head over to ifanboy.com/donations, where you can click to donate and help us out with everything we do. And we appreciate everybody who's donated, and thank you very much.
Can I just say, whew.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Whew.
Yeah, but this is one of those weeks, though, that makes you feel good about reading comics, because everything, you know, I didn't really have a bad comic in the whole bunch I had.
It was a great week.
There were more good books that we could have talked about. We just had to draw the line somewhere.
And I got
to
tell you, the whole Memorial Day Thursday thing just screwed my whole week up. Like, no idea. So. I'm looking forward to getting back to a regular schedule next week. So.
We didn't even talk about rookie Hal Jordan.
Oh, yeah. That was so good. Green Lantern was so good.
There was a great Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, see? We can't talk about them all. So, all right. So, until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh, and I have no joke. When I click bang, bang, a Wu-Tang slow hits your brain.